Poddo.
Welcome to Serve and Volley, the tennis podcast for people who like arguments. I'm Nick.
I'm Pavel.
Hello and welcome back to Serve and Volley. We're here with your annual update on the state of men's and women's tennis. I think we last spoke in the summer of 2020, in the middle of the pandemic, which we still feel like we're in the middle of. And we did a sort of special episode on who's the greatest of all time. A lot of tennis has happened since then, Pavel. What's been your highlight of the last year?
I mean, I think it's nice to finally have the so-called next gen really seeming competitive for titles in the way that they haven't been in a consistent way earlier. Women's tennis, as ever, has been quite interesting with new narratives emerging. So it's kind of hard to get a grip on who's really the favorite for any of the upcoming titles. Although, I guess Ash Barty has been consistently the best player over the last few years.
Yeah, Ash Barty has been sort of a relatively unprecedented strength as number one for a non-Williams in recent years, right? I saw some tweet or something saying that she had, in terms of consecutive weeks at number one, it's really extremely rare what she's achieved. She's managed to achieve it without establishing a really, you know, profound hegemony on the women's game. I still feel like you think that anyone can beat her on their day, which is what's nice about the... let's not go all the way back to the rearranged French Open last year, and perhaps we'll discuss last year's men's US Open when we talk about the coming of the next gen. But how about this summer? How was this summer for you? Did you enjoy the Olympic tennis?
I didn't see too much of it, but I always enjoy Djokovic being disappointed, so I enjoyed that aspect of it.
Felt sort of like the beginning of the end for Djokovic, that match he lost to Zverev at the Olympics.
Yeah, and then also the meltdown against Carreño Busta. It's strange. I mean, he really was not that far away from the Steffi Graf Golden Slam feat. And then suddenly the wheels just fell off. And then in the final, in the US Open against Medvedev, he seemed very tame and it seemed very one-sided. I think originally everyone kind of anticipated it to go in the other direction.
No, I didn't. I thought he'd lose to Zverev in the semis. And I think in a way he did lose in the semis, because that game match against Zverev was so kind of draining that I think he looked in the final just like he had nothing left to give. And he was playing, you know, it feels an old-fashioned game that Djokovic plays now, this sort of returning, not massively dominant on serve. You know, the what he was doing against Zverev, because Zverev has become very good. He's in very good form, I think, at the moment. But he's just such a serve bot. And I know that historically, I guess, you've always felt like you can get under the skin of his serve. But that encounter, and throughout the American hardcourt season, Zverev was serving so well. And then Medvedev has been just serving incredibly too. I mean, for all that they're not serve bots, they do just have unbelievable serves that just make it so difficult, even for the world's best ever returner, probably, to play them.
Yeah, I mean, even in the kind of super dominant Djokovic era, I guess 2011 and 2015 were his like two biggest years, you didn't really have someone like Zverev or someone like Medvedev. You had the closest would be Del Potro if it weren't for injuries, but, you know, someone who's 2 meters tall and also moving really well around the court, you know, that doesn't describe anyone really. And I mean, it sort of describes Cilic at some point, but you know, he's a head case. And as was Zverev until recently, and finally he seems to have been pulling some results together after that US Open final, and then obviously the Olympic gold. He's kind of progressing in his career finally to where people expect him to be probably about 3-4 years ago. Mm. Obviously marred by controversy. We're not going to go into that, I don't think. We're not legally qualified.
And it was a kind of rare one in the US Open where, in this country, but I think globally, the women's final outranked the men's final in terms of media coverage, in terms of viewership. And it was kind of even more extraordinary for the fact that it was a men's final that could have been absolutely historic. What did you think of the women's tournament at the US?
I think everyone's kind of a bit bored of the big three orthodoxy on the men's side. Conversely, on the women's side, having two teenagers in a major final is something we haven't had in a very long time. So I think the kind of, as a counterbalance to old guys doing really, really well, having young women break through. And I think that was also the case with Svantec. That was the case with Ostapenko when she won. I think it's nice to have these narratives. What's going to be interesting is, I mean, Raducanu is an excellent player. Fernandez is an excellent player. But we've had problems in the WTA with these names emerging and then not being able to achieve the consistency that people would like them to have.
Who are you thinking of?
I mean, Ostapenko is a great example of that.
Ostapenko is just into the semis at Indian Wells.
I know.
Svantec has got to the quarterfinals of every major since she won the French Open without dropping a set at 19. You know. I get what you're saying. It doesn't feel like you sent me some odds that British bookmakers, and obviously British hysteria over Raducanu is kind of slightly deranged, but you know, British bookmakers, the odds on her winning at least two Grand Slams next year was something like 17-1 or something, 14-1. The chances of her getting
free money, guys,
an iron grip on the women's game at the age of 18 is very slim. But you know, I think there's still a real hope that she can consolidate herself as a top 20 player over the next year.
Sure, yeah, I'm not doubting that. I'm just thinking of, I don't know, someone like Bouchard maybe, who was again such a talent, but then was super featured in the media for a lot of other reasons. And
yeah, but also there's Deus Ex U.S. Open locker room. You know, there's there were things outside of her control which I guess have impacted her game. But I think she sort of had the Sharapova issue, but without maybe the ability to tune out the noise.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a fantastic tournament from the women's side. I think it was about the third round that you texted me being like, oh, this Raducanu is the real deal. And
I was texting Nick being like, I think that's an interesting prospect for British tennis. I didn't think she was going to go all the way in that tournament. I wish I could have credit for that, but I thought you know maybe quarters or something, following on from her fourth round at Wimbledon, you know, someone to be top 10 for the future. But it seems like she could be top 10 in like 6 months. Yeah. And people wouldn't be shocked. Actually, the people who bet on her to win three slams next year would be shocked that she didn't. But
I really thought it was going to be Belinda Bencic's golden summer. I kept thinking that, you know, as a sort of, I don't know whether it's a sort of emotional, patriotic, emotional hedge to constantly bet against the rising British star, but I really thought that the draw had opened up for Belinda Bencic. She seemed to be in such good form. Oh well, she'll probably never win a Grand Slam now. That was her one chance.
Well, I think that's a bit dispiriting. I'm sure she'll have opportunities.
Andreescu would have been a good other one to add to your.
Yeah, that is a great example. She's previous list. She was very bad the other day.
But she seems to be hitting some form in the American hardcore season. Anyway, we're midway through Indian Wells, and by the time you're listening to this, listener, you'll probably know who won. I said from the start that I thought Zverev would win on the men's side.
Well, because you said Medvedev was the obvious choice.
I had a sense that he might lose to Dimitrov. From the outset, I thought if they meet, he'll be the undoing of him.
Is it written in blood on your bathroom mirror?
It is written in, let's say blood. On the women's side, the first semi-final, I think, was confirmed last night, which is Ostapenko, who is you're a great fan of, and Azarenka.
Yeah. Well, I love people who just smash the shit out of the ball. It's hard to really predict. I mean, Azarenka obviously has had some deus ex of her own in recent years with her bitter divorce and the custody of her son. So, you know, on the human level, I wish her the best. On the tennis level, I find her unwatchable, or rather unlistenable. I can't stand shriekers. So I will be unashamedly pulling for Ostapenko. But, you know, if Azarenka does go all the way, it will be a nice story of sorts. Although since her comeback, she has had one or two big results, hasn't she? Or has it always been kind of like this, like semis at Indian Wells type level results?
Insert fact check here. Well, let's move to then look at kind of what we sort of intimated earlier when we talked about the decline and fall of the Djokovic empire, which is, I should add also, the fact that Nadal has been off since, when did he last compete in the Australian? Did he? I can't even remember when Nadal last.
No, I think he made it through to like the summer.
He played in the French.
He played in the French, but he lost to Djokovic.
He lost to Djokovic in the semi-final, an incredible match. And then Federer played Wimbledon, lost to Urquhart in the quarters.
Quarters, yeah.
Which was, I think it was a pretty decent showing for Federer, because I just think he seems so limited now. And I thought he would be beaten quite comprehensively by Urquhart, and was, I think. And it feels sort of like we're unlikely to see a Nadal or Federer Grand Slam victory again at this point. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Nadal is that his body has always let him down in crucial junctures. But at this point, he really is, you know, well, he's 35 now, and he's played such a physical style. Federer at 40, you know, we've been blessed to have his comeback in 2017, 2018, when he was genuinely, I think, for me, the best player in the world. So, you know, now my expectations, even as a huge Federer fan, are really low, and I'm just enjoying kind of the twilight years of his career. You're a big Andy Murray fan. What do you think of his kind of recent struggles / you know?
I don't think I don't class it as struggles, because I think it's in the same way. It's every game is a blessing at this point. I mean, it's just nice to have no one. He is setting himself very high expectations, and he obviously, I think, is a very competitive person and has always taken every game extremely seriously, for better or for worse. So I think he's setting himself very high expectations and maybe disappointed with some of his performance levels. But, you know, he at Indian Wells, he's winning a couple of matches. He's playing like a top 30, 40 player at the moment. He's lost quite a tough game, a match against Zverev. He was, you know, up a break in the first set and then sort of wobbled. And, yeah, I mean, a ridiculous match point. And he just, you know, it was a good match. I mean, he gave it his all. And I think Zverev, at the moment for me, Zverev is playing better than anyone else in the world. So, yeah, I think it's just nice to have him out there. As long as he's just happy competing at a level where he's probably not going to win Masters 1000 level tournaments. But
yeah, that match against Alcaraz, I just saw the highlights, but it seemed pretty awesome too.
Yeah, and it's nice for someone like Alcaraz to be playing someone like Murray. It will go down as like when you see sort of
Sampras Federer,
or, you know, I see a lot of like Federer Agassi, where they just look like different species of humans. You know, it's nice to have these moments where you can see the changing of the guard in action. But yes, I don't feel like there's any chance of Murray competing for any serious tournaments. I don't think there's any chance of Federer competing for serious tournaments. Nadal, perhaps, who can say? And Djokovic, it feels like perhaps we witnessed something this summer which will kind of spell a decline in his complete control of the game.
So you don't think he's going to be the favorite coming to the Australian Open, the tournament he's won a bajillion times?
I think he'll be the favorite going to the Australian Open, but I wouldn't expect him to win it in the way I expect him to win it last year.
Yeah, I think that's...
Which is fair enough, because he's, what, 33 now?
34, yeah.
34. Which has given opened the door a crack for the next gen who have been so... Well, they're not the next gen anymore. They're sort of...
I mean...
The next gen. The general...
I mean, team is, you know, pushing 30.
Team is...
As are we
also,
all.
I mean, when did team last play?
Well, team has been out with a wrist injury, which is quite unfortunate.
But he had two terrible Grand Slams before he went out with a wrist injury, right?
I think he was already struggling with his body at this point, but yeah, it's kind of hard to tell. When he won the US Open, I've been a team fan for a while, as kind of mentioned before with Ostapenko. I love people who smash the shit out of every ball. But yeah, it's speaking of people like that, is Wawrinka just retired now? I haven't heard anything about him.
No, I think he's around. He's part of the sort of the Legends Tour of, you know, Murray, Wawrinka, Nishikori, who just pop up in tournaments and you forget they exist. We would have noticed if Wawrinka had retired, right?
Probably, but he wasn't in the draw for any of the recent big tournaments, was he? Is he just injured?
I can't speak to that. Anyway. Insert fact check here.
Yeah.
Our large production team will work on that. So the next gen, let's say Tsitsipas, Zverev and Medvedev, it feels like they're the kind of the holy trinity. Do you think they're now ready to make the step up?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're all physically fit, and whatever you may think of them as personalities, which, yeah, they're not going to be the next big three in terms of results or in terms of how beloved they're going to be for various reasons. But I think they've shown that they can do it over five sets as well as over three sets.
Well, all three of them have lost Grand Slam finals in five sets. Two of them have lost Grand Slam finals from two sets up, right?
Zverev and Tsitsipas, but not Medvedev.
Not Medvedev. He got back to from two sets down against Nadal and then lost.
Yeah.
Which is a different sort of bottling. But yeah, you think they've proved they can do it over five sets. Well, certainly Medvedev has.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of embarrassing that they haven't been able to break through and really beat Djokovic and Nadal in those big matches until the US Open this year, which, you know, has some caveats attached to it. But I think then now you kind of expect to see them in those finals. And since Djokovic and Nadal are 34, 35, and like you said, you know, their star is waning, I think you expect these guys to be consistently beating the Hurkaczes and the Felix Auger-Aliassimes of the world, at least. Let's put it that way. Or Shapovalovs, you know. There's a lot of these like next gen players who, I mean, okay, Felix is 21 years old. There was a lot of hype attached to him earlier in his career. He's been in like 7 tournament finals and lost them all. So again, things might just click into gear for him. But
yeah, got his first Grand Slam quarterfinal in the US Open, right?
Sounds right. Fact check here. Yeah, so it will be interesting to see kind of, you know, Alcaraz looks great and he's like 18 and there's a bunch of teenagers coming through like Musetti, like Brooksby, and you know, it's only time will tell. But I think we can expect over the next 3 years, over the next 12 slams, I would expect that trinity of sorts to win, you know, half of them, if not more.
That trinity, that kind of the next big three, they seem like a very different prospect from what we've seen as the big three over the last, whatever it is, 15 years. I mean, what sort of legacy do you think it's difficult to talk about what legacy they'll leave, but sort of what do you feel like going into they'll look like? Do they seem like not a big three that will be competing for tennis history, really, in the same way that the big three as we've known them over the last few years have done? It's sort of, are we in a sort of interstitial period, or sort of are they a caretaker big three before we get the next? I don't know, they don't always have to come in threes, I guess.
I thought it was a big four originally anyway.
I'm very unpatriotically calling them the big three.
Yeah, no, I think recent years have shown that Murray was head and shoulders above the rest of the field, but head and shoulders below the big three, obviously. But yeah, I think we've had this before, right? We had the kind of Sampras and Agassi dominance in the 90s, and then a bit of like early noughties were this weird period, which, you know, you had Hewitt winning one or two majors, you had Safin winning one or two majors, but there wasn't, and then Agassi and Sampras were still doing well, but were considered old back then, which now they wouldn't be. And yeah, you had Thomas Johansson. I mean, if you pick Thomas Johansson out of a lineup, I'll give you £100.
Is this a serious thing? We could do that on the next episode.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, you had people like that winning majors. So I think we've had this kind of going from one period of extreme dominance to another period of extreme dominance before. It could be that, you know, one of these next three will also be able to establish themselves in this way. But I also wouldn't be surprised if someone like Alcaraz or whoever comes through in a few years' time and starts beating them, because they just don't have this, like, iron grip psychologically over... They don't feel like they're just winners, you know? I mean, they're pushing, what, 25? Which by this point, all the all-time best players have won a bunch of slams.
Yeah.
Björn Borg retired. He was younger than team is now.
Right. And also, a lot of the all-time best players, you can correct me if I'm wrong because you're better on this sort of thing than me, I think had started to impose themselves on the men's game at the age of Alcaraz.
I mean, it depends on what your definition of imposes, but certainly... Yeah, like their first top 10 wins, I think, would have been before 20 for sure. Their first major wins, I think, apart from Nadal and Becker and Michael Chang, there's been a few of these like kind of prodigies, but I think it tends to be, I think your most kind of productive years tend to be between 20 and 27.
Sure,
So yeah, so but I'm not, those guys still have time, but like they're already halfway through the super productive period, and between the three of them, they have one major. Yeah, right?
I don't think we're going to look at them as, you know, greats of the game in 20 years time, 30 years time. But I'm just, I guess, wondering whether the game has changed in some way that makes it prohibitive for people to come through as early, whether maybe the fault of the next gen, it's not the fault of the next gen, but something perhaps structural or technological or economical that has made it just harder to come through. I just don't feel like in the men's game, I feel like the chances of having... How old was Boris Becker when he won Wimbledon? 17?
Something like that.
I think the chance of a 17-year-old winning a Grand Slam seems absolutely impossible now. But is that just a failure of imagination?
So why is Raducanu winning majors to the 18. What's the difference between the men's and women's game in that sense? Because women's game always had those prodigies, right? We had Hingis, we had Sellis, we had, you know,
well, I guess the women,
Jennifer Capriati.
The women's game, I guess, has this issue where women's careers tend to happen earlier because there is, has historically, I guess, been a, you know, the looming threat of pregnancy and childbirth and all sort of things that are not compatible with being a top level athlete. And I think generally this is a completely anecdotal thing, and I would but women's sports tend to peak earlier, and perhaps for that societal reason. But equally, I think it's a less physical game. I mean, I don't know. I mean, are 17-year-olds fully grown? Are they fully bulked out? I mean, you know,
I don't know. I mean, do you have like these 15-year-olds winning Olympic gold medals in swimming? And swimming seems pretty physical to me compared to tennis. I think what the big three has done so well, and you know, Agassi and Sampras did back in their time, is their tennis IQ seemed to be higher. They seem to be, you know, more robust in their mental game. Whereas maybe that's a bit unfair, but I think on the women's side, the mental game generally is weaker. So maybe the gap between the teenagers and the people in their mid-20s isn't as stark. Although I saw some interesting research where, you know, there's kind of this perception that people like Djokovic are just more clutch on big points. But apparently, they're not. Apparently, if you're just a better player, you will win more of the important points.
Yeah, no shit.
But like, they don't elevate their game in those moments. They just, their game also drops. They also will choke a bit. But because their level is higher starting off, they won't drop to a lower level than their opponent.
I think it's very hard to elevate your level, but I think it's very easy to drop your level. And I think if you're someone who is serving for the match against Djokovic and you think this is the best player in the world, I think you get tenser than you would against someone you think you're going to beat. And I think that works in Djokovic's favor.
Yeah, I mean, this is not about Djokovic, but to kind of harken back to the 2020 US Open final, I think that is one of the funniest matches I've ever seen, because Zverev and team seem to be competing over who can choke hardest.
Yeah.
Like, team came out obviously as the favorite, and then that just completely buckled under pressure. And then Zverev won two sets up and he was like, shit, I'm the favorite now. And then buckled under pressure.
It was,
and then in the fifth set,
genius tactic from team. The only way you can play Zverev is to make him the favorite.
Yeah, that was a wonderful match. Such a contrast to like some of the big.
But I think a similar thing seemed to happen in the French Open final this year, where, you know, Tsitsipas went two sets up, and then I can't remember how long his bathroom break was. Maybe should have taken a slightly longer one, but you know, then seemed to be just uncertain of himself. And then Djokovic is, you know, you've got this sort of like, you know, bar fight mentality, just sort of like, well, I'll just, you know, nothing to lose from here. And it's, you know, obviously it is, that's the, what makes five set tennis so good, is that, you know, you could be doing really, really badly and there's just still such a long way to go. You know, a set is such a long.
Yeah, I think those matches are a good advertisement for five set tennis. I know there's been some debate in recent years, but in my head, there is no debate. I think it would be silly to switch to three sets in these big matches. I think there's something special and extra about.
So, Pavel.
Yes.
Two final questions. Firstly, who are your picks for the Indian Wells titles, which will probably have happened by the time anyone listens to this? So you'll look very foolish if you're.
Well, I mean, since you've gone with Zverev, I would go with Tsitsipas for the brain and Dimitrov for the heart.
And the women's. And you have to pick one. I didn't allow you two men's winners. I meant a men's and a women's champion.
All right, I'm going to go for Dimitrov just because it'll be bowler if he wins. Okay. But on the women's side, I would have to look up who's in the top half of the draw, to be honest. I can't remember.
I'll pick someone from the bottom half of the draw then.
Well, Ostapenko then.
Okay, and I've picked Zverev, and then I'm going to go for Jabeur on the women's side. It's about time. And then she'll break into the top 10 for the first time in her career, and it will be nice. Everyone likes her. And then finally, what are you looking forward to in the next month? Presuming we're not going to do another an episode every week for the end of the season. What's the kind of thing you're still looking forward to this side of Christmas, please?
I mean, it's sad. My thing to look forward to has always been the finals at the O2 Arena, but now we're all going to have to go to Turin to witness that.
Yeah.
We have a friend who I hope is listening to this, who's a huge Yannick Sinner fan. So there'll be a
cinephile.
Cinephile, who unfortunately Sinner lost to someone.
Taylor Fritz,
maybe? Yes, that's correct. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, the race to Turin is always, or the equivalent race to London, has always been quite a fun feature of the late indoor court season where people are really trying to eke out points. So just as out of, you know, I'm not actually a huge Sinner fan. Actually, we forgot to mention Sinner. He could be one of the kind of Carlos,
yeah,
Alcaraz. But yeah, so I think the race for the last couple of spots will be quite an interesting one.
For us spoiled brat London tennis fans who are lamenting the loss of the ATP finals to Turin, I see that the Labour Cup is in London next year, the O2.
Should we go?
So that will be nice. Yeah, of course we'll be there. We'll be there. We'll do a meetup of Serve and Volley fans.
Okay.
That's just me and you. Well, if you did listen to this, thanks for listening. And we will see you when we see you.
Bye.